TV.
Would you like to know why courtships work but marriages fail? I know exactly why, and I wrote about it in a book called Shaga, King Solomon's 3,000-year-old secret to successful relationships. If there are any married people out there or couples who have somehow lost the spark of sexual desire, it is not inevitable. I know what the social philosophers tell you. They tell you, well, it's inevitable. They call it the lust phase of the relationship. Well, that lasts a year. You know, of course, in the honeymoon, you're crazy about each other. But then after a year, then you settle into this mundane, humdrum, less exciting relationship. It's inevitable. No, it is not inevitable. It is not. Sexual passion, lust, is meant to last for the duration of your relationship. I don't care if you're 60, 70, 80 years old. That's right. You can rekindle it. I know what happens to it, and I explain it in this book. I'm going to explain it to you. I'm going to give you some highlights. And if you want to change your sexual relationship for the better, order Shaga. Let me tell you how I happened upon this word. I wasn't even looking for it. I was reading the book of Proverbs one day, and there I was in Proverbs 5, 19 and 20. I'm going to read this passage to you from the concordant version of the Old Testament. Wait till you hear this one word. Are you ready for this? Speaking of a man's wife, may her affections satiate you in every season. May you be inebriated by her love continually. This is Solomon to his son. Why should you be inebriated, my son, by an alien woman and embrace the bosom of a foreign woman? Why did this verse blow my mind? I mean, I just was reading this and it just hit me. Wait a minute. This word inebriated, what is this word? It's the word shaga. Shaga is a Hebrew word translated here inebriated. It is the same word used to describe people under the influence of alcohol. It means to stray, to err, to make mistakes, to wander aimlessly, to really be outside yourself, to be loose, to be intoxicated. This is what the word shaga means. And in this context, Solomon is saying, my son, why should you be intoxicated by an alien woman when you can be intoxicated by your wife? That's the essence of this passage. I saw that and I'm like, what? I can understand how a man would be intoxicated, inebriated, shaga, by an alien woman, a strange woman. You know how it is. You give somebody this extra long look. Maybe a woman brushes past your shoulder. And it's just like, ooh, you know that you could just let loose with this strange woman, the stranger. I mean, strange in the fact of you don't know her. Because, well, there's no baggage associated with, in this context, the alien woman. And so it is easy to see how someone could lose it. Someone could be inebriated, intoxicated, like letting it all hang out with a woman you don't even know. It's because of that baggage you have in your relationship that hinders you. Because you know this woman, you brush your teeth next to this woman, you've seen her crying, she's seen you in your underwear. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of things that happen that you are tempted to say, oh, yeah, intoxicated with my wife of 20 years? No. Well, I'm here to tell you that I enacted these principles in my marriage after being married to my wife for 20 years. And I will tell you this, I was more excited, more hot, more passionate, more lustful for my wife, the lady I've been married to for 20 years, than I was at the beginning of our relationship. And it was because of this passage. Solomon is saying, may you be inebriated by her love continuously. And inebriated, intoxicated, has to do, I'm sorry, with sex. Not with love. Of course, there should be love in a marriage. Love is unconditional, but inebriation is not unconditional. Lust is not unconditional. Love, yes, unconditional. Lust, passion, desire, no, that is not unconditional. It depends on certain things happening. It depends on an environment of sexual excitement being created. And I tell you that it is possible and probable for many of you, it's just your sex drive is hibernating. It's not destroyed. It's not gone. It's hibernating. It's waiting to be awakened. It's there. It's just asleep. It needs to be brought out. And this book is about how to bring it out. Not only are the scriptures in here that explain why men are attracted to women, but it gives step-by-step instructions of how to make this intoxication work in your marriage. So back to my original question, why do courtships work but marriages fail? Well, let me just read a short passage from Shaga, Hebrew word meaning intoxicated. The subtitle of this book, again, is King Solomon's 3,000-year-old secret to successful relationships. I'm on page 114. The courting man lives life uncertain of his sexual future. He is wired to hunt, to pursue. Pursuing sexual intimacy with a desirable woman is the greatest quest he can imagine. A man courting a lady pines for her glance, her words, a whiff of her hair. That she would grace him with these blessings seems unbelievable. That he could one day see her naked. Incredible. He wants to touch and pet and kiss and consummate his desire for her. But these verbs during courtship are tantalizingly out of reach. No wise woman at the dawn of passion pours all of her sweet tarts on the sofa. No, no. Rather, she teases. She knows her man's buttons and pushes them, then withdraws. He chases. She giggles. Men love to hate this. They hate it because they want to bite and suck the colorful candy. They love it because gratification kills the one thing men love even more than gratification, namely the pursuit of it. Yes. What kills relationships, what kills marriages, is the taking for granted of sex, the automatic sex. The wife becomes an automatic fulfillment center. You see, in the courtship phase of the marriage, again, she's tantalizingly out of reach. She knows his buttons, she pushes them and then withdraws, and it's an intoxicating situation because for the man, the sexual energy, that intoxication is more pleasurable to him, really, than the fulfillment of it. Because once men fulfill that, then it's gone. The secret of Shaga is to be intoxicated, as King Solomon says in Proverbs chapter 5, verse 19, may you be inebriated, intoxicated, Shaga, by her love continually. So this book explains how a woman can continually produce sexual tension. That's the beauty, sexual tension. And I tell you exactly how to do this in this book. There are specific ways for you to create sexual tension. In fact, ladies, with 12 words, you can reduce your man to a slobbering worshiper. 12 words. What, you think I'm going to tell you the 12 words now? No, I'm not going to tell you the 12 words. You have to read the book. The 12 words are in here. And I explain the reason why this is. I even explain male fetishism. Oh, King Solomon. I have quotes from Solomon here in the Song of Solomon that are absolutely incredible. He is waxing eloquent over his lover. At one point in Song of Solomon, he rhapsodizes over her necklace. He rhapsodizes over the sandals on her feet. He even says one strand from your necklace basically inebriates me, intoxicates me. Seems like Solomon is a fetishist. What's a fetish? It's finding sexuality in things. But speaking from the viewpoint of a man, for instance, a woman's lipstick, okay? If it's sitting there at the store, it means nothing to me. Or a woman's shoe, let's put it that way. If it's sitting at the store, it means nothing. And most men will tell you this. The men don't give a damn about the thing unless it's associated with the woman. Once a woman, this is the power of femininity. This is the power of womanhood. Once a woman touches a thing or wears a thing, it becomes holy. It becomes sacred in connection with her body. Men are like this. Women are mystified by this. But I'm telling you, this is the key to your man. The key to your man. It is a God-given thing. And Solomon himself writes about his lover's feet in sandals and a strand of her necklace and the smell of her hair. These things intoxicate men. Women don't understand it. But ladies, as soon as you understand it, you have the keys to the kingdom. Because many of you I know have rolled your eyes when your man approaches you with his fetishes. Oh, would you mind, baby? Would you mind wearing this nice little thing to bed? Why can't you love me for who I am? I don't know how many times I heard that question in my marriage. Why can't you love you? Why can't you love me for who I am? I deal with that in this book. It's like women almost dare their men to desire them with absolutely nothing added. In fact, I have a hypothetical conversation in this book. A young girl I know sees these principles plainly with her new boyfriend. That is, a man's tendency, the principle of a man's tendency to see a woman's physicality first. A man is drawn to a woman's physicality first. With women, it's the other way around. They're drawn to a man's character, to his eyes. A man looks at other things first. In fact, in the Song of Solomon, this is fascinating. Song of Solomon, chapter 5, verses 11 through 16, Solomon's lover lists his attributes. And the order in which she notices things is inspired. This is what she loves about him. And I'm taking this from Scripture. In the order it is presented in Scripture. Number one, his head. Number two, his locks. Number three, his eyes. Number four, his cheeks. Number five, his lips. Number six, his hands. Number seven, his abdomen. Number eight, his legs. Number nine, his appearance. Number 10, his mouth. Notice that with her, it starts with the head down. These are the things she notices, she appreciates. Now, when Solomon rhapsodizes eloquent over his bride, this is what he notices. Number one, her feet. He starts at the bottom and goes up. She starts at the top and goes down. He starts at the bottom and goes up. This is inspired. This is a huge difference between men and women. He starts with her feet, then two, her hips, three, her navel, four, her belly, five, her breasts, he's working up, six, her neck, seven, her eyes. With her, it's number three. With him, it's number seven. He finally gets to her eyes at number seven. Eight, her nose, nine, her head, 10, her hair. I write in this chapter, first on her list is his head. From here, she works down. He, on the other hand, begins at her feet and works up. She does not arrive below his neck until 0.6. At the same time, he finally ventures north of her breasts. Remarkable. And yet it isn't. It's typical of the God-given differences between the sexes. And we ought to be celebrating the God-given differences between the sexes. And when utilized, these differences can ignite the spark again, reignite the spark in your relationship. The bride first wants her lover's thoughts and emotions, and so begins at the seat of his intellect. He, on the other hand, wants to cling to and worship her femininity. And for him, that begins at her feet. It's perfect. It's symbiotic. It's instinctual. It's wonderful. Each gender fulfilling its role. All men should begin the courting process at a woman's feet, either figuratively or literally, preferably literally. Men eventually arrive here when proposing marriage, but what took them so long? A man at a woman's feet is a physical act, but simultaneously symbolic. The Lord Jesus Christ literally washed the feet of his disciples, but who cannot see behind the performance an act of humility, sacrifice, and service? It would stun a modern woman to see a man bowed down before her. Even the propositioned woman giggles and turns red at the suitor on bended knee. Not the Shaga woman. Oh no, not the Shaga woman. She knows her power and its effect. Here it starts from From this vantage point, she gazes upon her suitor's head and locks. How patient is the bride of Solomon. As his worship ascends, she seeks the windows to his soul. At her navel, he gazes up at her in adoration. Their paths cross at point six. His strong hands caress her neck. He rises to full stature as her eyes now descend the corrugations of his trunk. Now he admires her beautiful head. He smells her hair. At last, there is a kiss. She obtains the sweetness of his mouth. Like wine, the kiss has aged, becoming finer for the waiting. Four verses later, he soliloquizes over it, quote, "Your mouth is like the best wine." Ladies and gentlemen, these inspired differences will make for a renewed sexual relationship with you and your partner. But as I said, women are the last people to believe this, the last people to appreciate it. That is, a man's first notice of a woman's physicality. They balk at it. They don't like it because they think that they're rejecting her. Women think that men are rejecting her when they admire her breasts or her navel or her belly button. Solomon goes nuts over the navel of Abishag, his wife. Goes nuts over it. He goes crazy over her sandals, over her necklace. These things have no meaning for any man apart from contact with a woman. But a woman is so great in a man's eyes, so sexual, so above him, that even the things that touch her become holy to him. And ladies, if you tap into this power, the kingdom is yours. The kingdom is yours. And I have to teach women this. Now look at this hypothetical conversation in this book. A young girl I know sees these principles plainly with her new boyfriend. "He can't take his eyes off my body," she says. I ask, "Is that bad?" "I want a relationship," she says. "Well, how long have you known him?" "2 weeks." "Give him time. He'll work his way to your soul. But for him, this is where the attraction starts." She asks, "Where?" I pointed to her low-cut jeans. "And my belly button?" "No, your figure, Janine. You have a wonderful figure." "I want a spiritual oneness with Ryan." "Well, you're assuming he doesn't?" "Well, he does believe in God." "Then he'll get there." The phrase opposite sex didn't come out of nowhere. Women go to the soul first, then to the body. For men, the body is the conduit to the soul. Well, that sounds profound, but hey, I'm not having sex with him. I'm not talking about jumping in the sack, I say to her. Ryan is infatuated with your packaging. This is a good thing. Sex isn't just doing it with somebody. It's the fullness of the energy. There's energy between you, right? I mean, you don't seem too upset that Ryan's a football player. The guy's got great arms. Oh, no, of course. I love Ryan's body. I just want to make sure that he likes me for me. Here it is. Here it comes. I just want to make sure he likes me for me. Oh, this is my answer to her. Then gain 40 pounds. Stop washing your face. Contract acne. Chop off your hair. Dress in a bag. And wear army boots. Huh? Grow a mustache, Janine. Chew skull. Overhaul a Chevy. Then you'll know for sure if he likes you for you. Hey, what are you trying to hand me? Just a clue, Janine. Just a clue. Trying to hand women everywhere a clue that testosterone is your best friend. Most women think it's their enemy. It's like, oh God, here it comes again. Oh my God, here comes that testosterone again. I got to deal with this. Ladies, testosterone is your best friend, but you have to learn to intelligently manage it. And the man has to be willing to let you intelligently manage it. And to do this, he has to confess his fetishes, his sexual desires, what he likes, because these are the keys to his kingdom. These things are considered unholy. As if holy sex, I don't even know what holy sex is. I mean, what is it? Is it some kind of Shakespearean thing? Thou art fair, my lover. No, it's like animalistic. It's down and dirty. God made it that way. It's supposed to be that way. It's intoxication. When you totally lose your mind in the presence of your lover. Read Song of Solomon. It's absolutely fantastic. In this book, I explain why the sex drive exists, why women are in the driver's seat of sex. You are, ladies, you're in the driver's seat. You have the power to change your relationship. You have to understand your man. Your man, I'm suspecting, has tried to present himself to you. Charles, stop it. Your man has tried to present himself to you. And maybe he's suggested certain things that he likes, but maybe you've shot him down. The most deadly thing a woman can do is what I call the eye roll. It's like, oh, here it comes, the eye roll. Ooh, that will devastate a man. And he will go into his little cave, and it'll be a long time before he has the courage, the bravery, to tell you what he likes. And this is the beginning of the end, because you are condemning him for being sensual, for focusing on your body, for being a fetishist. But, okay, let's say he loves your breasts. Hey, he would not love them if they were sitting over here, all right, and you were over there. Or your lingerie. If it was sitting on it was hanging on a rack at the store, he doesn't care about it, but it was on you, and it touches you, then he's intoxicated by it. Male intoxication. I'm giving away the keys to the kingdom. Some men might say, Martin, God, you're selling our souls here, man. You're exposing us. Yes, but men, I'm going to make it work for you because I'm going to convince your woman, and I do so in this book. I'm going to convince your woman that your desires are holy, that God gave you these things. And once your woman realizes that they're not sinful, that these what women would call objectification. Oh my God, I hate that term. He's objectifying me. Well, I'm sorry, but your feet are objects and your breasts are objects, but they're attached to you. He would have no interest in your feet if they were cut off and sitting over there, okay? People accuse me of, like, you're a shoe fetishist or you're a lingerie fetishist or whatever. I said, no, I'm a woman fetish. I have a woman fetish. It's the women that I love. And when I love a particular woman, then I'm infatuated with all the things that belong to her, that touch her. It's absolutely beautiful. Now, I sent a query letter. When I wrote this book back in 2005, yeah, I wrote it that long ago. I sent a query letter to a mainstream publisher. I thought, you know, I'm going to just go for it. So I sent it to International Creative Management, ICM. It's a literary agency in New York. I'll start at the top. And I sent a query letter and a sample chapter to Kate Lee of International Creative Management. They represented some real famous people. Ladies and gentlemen, the next day I got a phone call from Kate Lee. She was so fascinated by this book. And I was swinging the bat in Yankee Stadium at that point. And she took me on as a literary agent. So she was going to pitch this book to publishers. Do you know what happened? Little did I realize at the time, but most of publishing is run by feminists. And feminists do not like to hear that the key to happiness in a relationship is sex. No, because they try to homogenize the sexes. They don't want to hear that a happy relationship depends on them understanding their men's desire for the physical or to see their wives in something sexy, in a sexy bra, sexy panties, a cat suit, high heels, whatever. A certain bow in the hair. Solomon would love it. Oh, Solomon would rhapsodize over a bow in the hair of Abishag. That's men. Don't condemn it, ladies, because once you understand it and accept it, then you'll be able to use these things intelligently. Yes, use them intelligently to intoxicate your man, and he will be eating out of your hand. You will be like a sun in his universe, and he will revolve around you like a freaking planet. Sigmund Freud asked the famous question, what does a woman want? Apparently nobody knows. I know exactly what a woman wants. Ladies, tell me if I'm wrong. All a woman wants is to be the epicenter of an attentive male universe. That's holy. Do you want your man to revolve around you? Then you need to understand the secrets of Shaga. the secret of intoxication, how to induce it, how to manage it, and how to bring your pedestrian old relationship back to the excitement of courtship. When you intoxicated your man and you teased your man, and he is, I promise you this, he is in love more with the chase than with the fulfillment of the chase. He may not even admit it to himself, but after he reads this book, this thin book that'll change your life, after he reads this, he'll understand himself better than he ever has, and you'll understand him better than you ever have. And the result will be marital bliss. I know this. I lived it. It's true. Because God wrote the script. God made men and women the way they are. It's codified in Proverbs chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. Read it for yourself in any version. The word shaga, it means intoxicated. And I'll read this text from the back of the book, then I'll close for today. Drawing from 3,000-year-old wisdom found in the book of Proverbs, shaga demonstrates the sexual advantage women have over men, the purpose of the insatiable male sex drive, and the benefits to both parties of a man's God-given tendency to worship womanhood. Baby, it's all here. Get it and live.